أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد. وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. We put behind us a couple or several of those incidents that led to Fatimiyya and the Shahada of our mother Fatimah Zahra alayhi salam. And we went a little deep into them, especially Raziyatul Khamis. We got very deep into that and I explained why. The next item on the list, the next darkness of those last days of the Prophet, of course when we look at it, it's dark, is the whole concept of the last prayer of the Prophet. The Prophet, throughout his life, was always the one leading Jama'ah when he was available. Never in the presence of the Prophet, anyone would lead the prayer. But now we have a story. In the books, in the major books, in many books, about how during the life of the Prophet, when he was available, someone else led the Salat. Okay, so what? What's so good about that? What's so significant about that? Well, they have drawn conclusions from this story. We want to talk about two points here, two stories here. One of them is very short, the next one will be long. Number one is where the Prophet spent his last hours in, whose house he was in. Let's see if there's any discrepancies there or not. That's number one. And then number two, we'll move on to the last prayer of the Prophet and what happened there. Now you can say that the same way the Shia has, if you ask the Shia, what's your main reason? What's your main, you know, shiny reason that you have that shines out of all the reasons that you might pose and present as your dalil that Imam Ali was the first Khalifa or the one to succeed the Prophet? We will usually say the event of Ghadir, right? This last prayer of the Prophet can be considered the Yawmul Ghadir for the Sunni brothers and sisters. Because as you shall see inshaAllah, you have so many different books from Bukhari all the way down who have narrated this incident, one. And two, this is what they use as, and they say is the clearest proof that the Prophet did appoint someone after him. The same way we say Man kuntu mawla fa'ala aliyun mawla equals imama after the Prophet, they will tell you whoever leads the last prayer during the Prophet's time that the Prophet was supposed to lead but he didn't, that person is imam. And it's been narrated all over the place. Now for this, let me tell you the source that I was using. The late Allama al-Askari, Sayyid Murtada al-Askari rahmatullah alayhi, who has some major works. May Allah bless his soul. Recite a salawat for his soul, please. That's what I'm using. Of course, plus I've added some of my own thoughts to this whole topic and this session we're going to have, inshallah. They say this hadith is mutawatir, and to be honest with you, to an extent it is. The problem though is, what does mutawatir mean? Mutawatir means that one incident is narrated many times in different books by different people to the extent that you become sure. They're not going to all lie and make it up. Sometimes 30 people narrate something from one person. Maybe that one person, he's maybe making something up. But no, 30 different narrations from 30 different people. Yeah, A narrates from B, from C. D narrates from E, from F. The same incident. That's two. G from H and from I. Yeah, and goes on. No overlap here. Now, let's just say that this mutawatir means something that is narrated so much. This mutawatir incident has been narrated so much in a way that there is no overlap amongst the narrators, which is not the case, of course. But let's just say, is the incident that is related, that they are going to be using as proof, the same way we use Ghadir as proof, is it really the same incident with the same details or different? We'll get there, inshallah. Before that though, a little step. Step number one, let's first, to get ourselves warmed up a little bit, to get an idea of how things are working in the last hours of the Prophet, in the last days of the Prophet, let's see whose home he went. Let's look at the narrations, of course, according to Sahih al-Bukhari. As I said last night, and I've been saying again and again, and I'll repeat again, we're not after proving anything from Sahih al-Bukhari that will help the Shia and prove the Shia faith and our teachings. We're not after that, although we can do that too, but we're not after that right now. We just want to show that impartial brother or sister that is looking for the truth, that listen, don't let them tell you, or don't think that the Sunni school of thought is based on firm foundations and it's just the Shia that are shaky, on shaky foundations. No, we have discrepancies everywhere. So it will boil down to your understanding, your common sense, your thought, and your discretion to choose the right path. Right? There are two schools of thought. They're both based on, quote unquote, shaky foundations. It's not that one is firm and solid and the other one's shaky. No, let's just say they're both shaky. You use your mind a little bit more. Use your fitrah sometimes a little bit more. And see what you think. This is all we're after. Anyway, in Al-Bukhari, Aisha says, when the illness of the Prophet became severe and his pain increased, he got permission from his other wives to stay in my home. So I take care of him, and they gave that permission. Okay, very good. Another one, again in Bukhari. In the illness in which the Prophet passed away, he would continuously ask, where am I going to be tomorrow? In reality, he was waiting for the turn of Aisha. So permission was given to the Prophet to stay in the home of Aisha. Of course, by the other wives of the Prophet. Because they all had their turn and their share of the Prophet staying with them. They said, it's okay, let the Prophet stay with Aisha. Okay, so far so good. But then we go down more. Bukhari again, he says, Aisha said, and please note that they're all from Aisha, the Prophet would observe the turn of his wives when it came to whose home he was staying in. But when he turned ill, he began to ask whose house he will be in the next day. And in reality, he greatly wanted to be in Aisha's home. So when my turn came, meaning Aisha, he settled in my home. Okay, first of all, In these hadith, what do we see? We see that there's an ijtihad happening again. Please pay attention. There's an ijtihad happening again. The Prophet, did he say this, that I'm asking this question, whose house am I going to be in tomorrow? Is he asking this question because he can't wait for Aisha's turn to arrive? Is that the case? The hadith doesn't say it. But she has concluded this in the hadith. So this is her ijtihad. This is number one. And I've explained how the ijtihad of a non-ma'sum in these ahadith, according to the Sunni school, won't necessarily be binding on us to accept. That's one. Number two is, maybe he's asking this question of whose house am I in tomorrow, because he gives great importance to the turns of his wives. And since he's very, very ill, maybe he has forgotten, or he can't recollect where he's supposed to be staying tomorrow. Yeah? And not necessarily that it's because out of love of somebody. Or we're not even going to say that he doesn't love his wife. We're not saying that. Just showing that there is discrepancy here. It doesn't read with what we can understand from the hadith. All right. But the most important thing is that the first two hadiths, and there's probably more too, I just put three here. The first two say he got permission from his wives to come and stay with me. That means it was not my turn, right? While in the third hadith it says He kept asking whose turn it's going to be tomorrow until it finally became my turn, and then he came to my home and he settled there. Okay, so which one of these? How can we reconcile these? Well, I tried. I can't reconcile them. That was it that she there. He was waiting for his her turn to come, and then he, when it finally came, he went? Or no, even when it wasn't his turn, her turn, he got permission from the rest of his wives so that he can go stay there. We have a major discrepancy here that I cannot solve. I can't solve. I tried. Okay, now move on. This is the warm up. Let's move into the meat of the thing, of the story now. The last prayer now. Regarding the last prayer, let's look at the main story according to all of these books. Now, brothers and sisters, I'm not going to lie here. A lot of books have mentioned this hadith. I mean, that's why I call it Deir Ghadir. This is Deir Ghadir. What with our Ghadir, what do we boast about? What are we happy about? That's not a good word, boast. What are we happy about, happy and proud about when it comes to Ghadir? That, for example, Allama Sharafuddin, in his book Al-Murajaat, for example, he has shown how many tens upon tens, maybe even close to 100, I don't remember, I'm not good with numbers, and my memory fails me sometimes. How many turuq it's called? How many different narrations we have for Ghadir? That's what we're proud about. It's mutawatir. And the other school, the Sunni school of thought, also accepts that it's mutawatir. That's why they work on the meaning of man kuntum mawla. But they don't say it never happened. Yes? That's what we're happy about. Here, we're going to be honest. There is a lot of ahadith, tens of ahadith, that are talking about this incident. For example, Bukhari, Muslim, Musnad bin Hanbal, Tabaqat, Ansab of Baladuri, and so on. What do they say? Let's one version of this story. Now, I want you to pay attention to the different versions and the different details that are mentioned in this story. It says, when the illness of the Prophet became severe, Bilal informed the Prophet of the time of prayer. The Prophet said, order Abu Bakr to lead the people in prayer. Aisha says, so I told the Prophet, O Prophet, Abu Bakr is a sensitive individual, and if he stands in your place for prayer, he cannot fulfill the duties of the Imam of the prayer. If you appoint Umar for this task, it is better, Aisha is saying. The Prophet said, you are like the women around Prophet Yusuf. Order Abu Bakr to lead the prayer. The women around Prophet Yusuf, they were trying to change his direction from obedience of God to sin, right? Prophet is saying that you're not letting me do what I'm supposed to be doing. You're getting in the way. Go out, get out of the way. The first Khalifa is supposed to lead this prayer. This prayer is going to be the sign of his imama and khilafa for eternity. I added that part. Another account goes like this, again in Bukhari. So the first one was Bukhari, this one's Bukhari too. The Prophet ordered, and the reason, brothers and sisters, I'm saying this and I'm going a little bit into detail. I'm getting messages, emails from people. And you see it online. People are asking these questions. When there's little discussions going on, our brothers and sisters don't know what to say. They haven't even heard of these things. They don't know the significance of the last prayer. While the first person to argue for the Khilafah of Abu Bakr was who? Umar ibn al-Khattab. Using this argument, he said, how can you fall ahead, O Ansar who are in Saqifa? How can you fall ahead of Abu Bakr, the one that the Prophet said to lead the prayer? His final prayer. People are asking, people get stuck. Anyway, second account. The Prophet ordered that they have Abu Bakr lead the prayer. Aisha said, Abu Bakr is sensitive. If he stands in prayer, he will begin to weep. Or in other reports, that it says, the people will only hear his weeping. The Prophet said to order him to lead. Aisha repeated what she had said. The Prophet said again to order him and then said, you are like the women of that are around Yusuf alayhi salam. So here someone might say, oh, that's good. Look, see, they're offering each other this last prayer. She says, no, I don't want my father to go. Let's give it to Umar to go. So look, at least they are honoring each other with sending someone else to lead this prayer. Okay. That's what you kind of feel when you see this, right? But let's look at what one of these accounts of Bukhari again goes on to say. It goes on to say this. It says, Aisha says, the reason I would keep trying to change the mind of the Prophet so he doesn't order Abu Bakr to lead was because I didn't think the people would like the one who would replace the Prophet. Yeah? When you have a great leader and he passes away, someone takes his place, when you look at that person standing in the place of that leader, that beloved leader of yours that had passed away, although the second one is the one to replace him is also righteous, for example, but still, you get upset. Here she's saying, I wasn't saying like I want someone else to lead because, you know, he's sensitive and all that. Apparently this is an excuse according to this account. She's saying, no, I was afraid that the people, when they see him take the Prophet's place, they're going to have a disgust in there. They're going to feel disgust. They'll be upset. Wow. I didn't think the people would like the one who will replace the Prophet. I believed that the people will take bad omen in the one who takes his place. So I wished that the Prophet would change his mind. Or I tried to change the Prophet's mind. That's why. Another account, Bukhari. So Aisha told to tell Umar. She turns to Hafsa and she says, Hafsa, tell your dad to go, Umar. So now we know what the reason is. Why she wants someone else to go instead of her father, Abu Bakr. She says, Hafsa, tell your father to go. And she tells her father to go. Oh, she tells Umar to go. And then that's when the Prophet gets angry when he finds out. And he says, you are like the women of Prophet Yusuf. Yes? You are like the people of Prophet Yusuf, the women around Prophet Yusuf alayhi salam. And then here Hafsa gets angry. She says to Aisha, she says, I've never seen any good from you. You got me in trouble again, telling me to send my father instead of your father. Another version. You see, brothers and sisters, each version is different in its details. So this mutawatir, is it revolving around one incident or is it revolving around several different incidents? It's different incidents. If it's different incidents, then you can't call it tawatur anymore. But anyway. Another version. Prophet wasn't feeling well. They bring him water. He says, they tell him the people are waiting for salat. Bring me water so I make wudu. He makes wudu. He passes out. He wakes up. What happened? Did the people pray? No, they're waiting for you. Bring me water. He does wudu again. Passes out. Again, same thing happens. Wudu passes out. Eventually says, you know what? Send Abu Bakr to go. So this is another version of it now. None of that dialogue between the Prophet and Aisha. Keep these in mind, brothers and sisters, when you get stuck in university. I can't count how many times people come to me and say, please, please help us out here. Tell us what to say. I'm telling you, this is what we say. There's discrepancies here. Although they'll probably have more answers. But anyway, you want to show that you know what's going on, at least. Another version, the Prophet wasn't feeling well. He sent a companion and told him to have someone lead. So here, this part, pay attention to this. The Prophet says to a companion, come, go and tell somebody to lead. So this companion goes out and he looks, he can't find Abu Bakr, this version says. Instead he tells Umar to go. Umar goes and starts praying because the hadith says he had a loud voice. The Prophet hears and he says, who's that leading? Stop. Abu Bakr has to lead. So Abu Bakr comes back and he is the one who redoes the prayer of the people. And this is you find this version in the Umar series that they made. This version of it they've put there. Okay, the question is, if the Prophet says, tell somebody, why is he telling them when they put somebody there to change it? The Prophet apparently is in too much pain. We're going to need this as we go. Apparently, the Prophet is in pain. He tells them to do something. When they do it, he says, I didn't want this. Another version goes like this, that the Prophet, he lifts the curtain. Now this part gets very dramatic and drama, you know. He lifts the curtain, and there's probably music playing in the background. And then he looks, and he sees that, yes, they are leading the salat the way he had ordered. And then he smiles. And the person narrating the hadith, he says, we were, like, he's in prayer, but he's paying attention to the Prophet too. And he says, we didn't know why he's smiling. We couldn't tell. So Abu Bakr, when he finds out that the Prophet is watching, he moves back so the Prophet can come in his place. Apparently the Prophet is feeling better. He probably is telling himself. What happens is, when he wants to move back, the Prophet signals, stay. And he's still smiling, the Prophet. And and he drops the curtain, and then it was a few hours later that he passed away. He left this world happy that this had taken place. Am I boring you? Let me go to another version. When the illness of the Prophet worsened, Bilal came and informed the Prophet of the time of prayer, and the Prophet ordered that Abu Bakr lead. It's almost over, brothers and sisters, this part, so don't just hang in there. After Abu Bakr entered the masjid, the Prophet felt better and got up. But because of the extent of weakness, now this is Aisha saying this, he was leaning on two people. Now in some versions it says he was leaning on Fadl bin Abbas and another guy. Now the version, everyone knows the other one was Imam Ali. Please say his name. Apparently she doesn't want to say his name even. Because of the extent of his weakness, he was leaning on two people while his feet were dragging. So the Prophet felt better. But this is how he's feeling better. Keep this in mind, we'll need it later. His feet are dragging and he's in pain. They entered the masjid, and when Abu Bakr sensed the Prophet's presence, he moved back. But the Prophet signaled to him to stay where he is, and he sat next to Abu Bakr and began to lead the prayer. The Prophet was leading Abu Bakr, the hadith says, and Abu Bakr was leading the people. Now, I didn't get a chance to ask around or do enough research to find out, do we even have such a salat in Islamic Sharia where you will have an imam? He is leading one person, and then that one person is leading the rest. And the wording is like this, يَأْكَان يَأْتَمْ يَأْتَمْ. This comes from imama, imam of the jama'ah. كَان يَأْتَمْ بِرَسُولِ اللَّهِ وَالنَّاسِ يَأْتَمُونَ بِأَبِي بَكَرْ. So they're taking him as the imam jama'ah of the prayer. I don't know if we have such a thing. Maybe it's in the Sunni fiqh, I don't know. I didn't get time to, but I haven't heard of this before. Others will say, no, Abu Bakr was doing the jama'ah with the rest, but he was ahead, and he was signaling to the people when the Prophet is going to ruku' and sujood. The Prophet is praying sitting. He's signaling to the people. And the question that comes up is, well, the first row can see what the Prophet is doing. And then the second row can see the first row, and so on and so forth. These are all questions we'll have later that we'll talk about. Now, every night I've been saying this, right? That you reach a point where you just want to hurt yourself. This is that. Tonight we have reached that point. Where in one of the versions of the story, the Prophet, after the prayer, he says, the Prophet's happy. But he says that no Prophet came except that one of his people led him in prayer. This is the extra mile here. This is that extra step. That they are now, some of the reports are saying that as if Abu Bakr was leading the prayer and the Prophet is following. Subhanallah. So when the Prophet passes away and his janazah has been washed and their people are coming, they say for 3 days and praying Salat al-Janazah. No one was praying Salat al-Janazah in jama'ah. Why? Everyone says this. Because they say in the presence of Rasulullah, no one is to be an imam of jama'ah. Now this is the dead body of the blessed lifeless body of Rasulullah. So if someone can lead him when he's alive, then why not just have that same person who led him when he was alive to lead the janazah salat after he's passed away? This is important points. If we're going to go Abu Hanifa style, this is how it's supposed to work. If someone can lead the prayer once at least in their life, because the Prophet says no Prophet left this world except that he was led by one of his people in prayer, if that's the case, then why not? Why can't that person, after the Prophet has passed away, at least lead the janazah salat? But even when the Prophet has passed away, they say no one's allowed to fall ahead in the presence of Rasulullah. Subhanallah. This is, brothers and sisters, this is what I mean when I say this whole lens that is given to someone, it's over. If someone puts the lens of Adalat al-Sahaba on, he will see everything in that light. It's very hard to change it back. To the extent that this happens. Should we get a salawat and get the brothers to move forward? Allah. They didn't even move. Recite another salawat. Okay. I'm not going to get into the reports now here where Imam Ali is narrated to have said these things, because I'm afraid someone's going to hurt themselves. That you will find reports that Imam Ali says, yes, we looked and we noticed that there is no one better than us than the first Khalifa to lead. And like it's as if he's telling the Shia today, don't you make the mistake that you think that someone else was higher, that I was higher than others. No, it's interesting, this report. And there's a couple that Imam Ali said this. We're not even going to address those. We don't. It's too problematic to even waste your time on it. Anyway, let's move on to the challenges now, the problems and discrepancies we see, the questions that we have here. First of all, as I said last night, 10, 15, 20 of the tarikh books and history books, they're telling us that these people were all in the army of Usama, and the army of Usama was out of town. This one. Let's just put that aside. We already talked about that. It's interesting when you watch that Umar series, you're asking yourself, you're like, man, let me see which one of these they're going to put, which one of these versions they're going to put in there. Yes? And then you find that if out of like the 25 versions or the 13, 14 versions, there's like two or three of them that are there. Well, what happened to the other versions of the story? How come you didn't show those? Anyway, now this is the last prayer of the Prophet. Okay. We have to also say this, that there are some books out there. For example, the history ones, not, and the Sira books, not Hadith books like Bukhari and Muslim, that say that if Abu Bakr prayed 17 prayers, or for the 9 days that the Prophet was, for 9 days he led the prayers, or he led 3 prayers, but none of these digits and figures do you find in Bukhari and Muslim. So here we will tell them, we'll say, listen, it's not in those other books. So we're dealing with one issue here that is established, and that is the last prayer of the Prophet. All of those versions of the story, they pertain to the last Salat, which is the Salat al-Fajr of the Monday that the Prophet passed away in. The first question that comes up right away is, after all these different versions, which itself is a big question, I can't reconcile between all of these. If there was 20 different prayers, I would say each of these stories has to do with one of those prayers that he led. And that will necessitate that every time the Prophet is saying, you are like the women of Prophet Yusuf. No, it seems as if these are all about one incident. Other than this, that there's different versions that we can't reconcile, that's problem number one. We have problem number two. Problem number two is that when the Prophet is feeling so light and good, and he's feeling better, and he comes to pray, his feet are dragging on the ground. He is in so much pain. If this was a sign, leading the last prayer was a sign of khilafa, then why is it that the Prophet comes out and sits next to Abu Bakr? We're not saying that he's trying to break his prayer, although the Shia believes that the Prophet came and broke his prayer. But the question is this, if this is going to be the main sign, the Ghadir Khum for Abu Bakr, then the Prophet shouldn't do anything that will cause people to start doubting what was meant by this. In the middle of the Salat, the Prophet comes and sits next to him, and now he's following him in a prayer that we've never heard of before. That's number one. If he was feeling like this, when he's feeling good, he's this bad and in this such shape, I wonder what it's like when he was feeling bad. And he had ordered that they send the first Khalifa to pray. Follow, please. Please follow. If the Prophet, when he's feeling good, they have to drag him and he has to sit and pray, I wonder what it's like when he's feeling bad and he appoints somebody to go lead the prayer. Alam al-Askari, he says, if that's the good, that he's barely making it, that when he's feeling bad, it means that he's unconscious. Someone might say, no, that who says so? We say, fine. You don't want to say, take it? Fine. But whatever it is, he has to be in very bad shape. And that's when the whole story of La Yahjur comes back to haunt those who used it somewhere else. If the Prophet appointed somebody to go plead prayer, he was feeling very ill. And we learned from others that if the Prophet is very ill, if he appoints somebody or asks for something, he probably is not knowing what he's talking about. Let me give you a story. Al-Allama Muhammad Rida Al-Mudaffar Rahmatullah Alayh. Who is he? He's a person who tried to change the books of the Hawza to make them more in an educational format, in a way that is like a book that is to be taught. Long story. So he's writing books. Until today, the Hawza is using his books. In Usul al-Fiqh, in Mantiq, he also has Aqaid books and so on. Okay. Muhammad Rida al-Mudaffar, Ayatollah Bahjat, he has an interesting story. I read this in the book of Ayatollah Bahjat. He says it himself. He says, there were nights I would see that his light is on. I would go to sleep in Najaf. I would wake up and I see his light was still on for Fajr or before Fajr when Ayatollah Bahjat would wake up. What's he doing? Just writing these books. Some people, man, I don't know where they're going to be in the heavens when we see them, if we see them, inshallah. This Muhammad Rida al-Mudaffar, they say, that he is invited to like a big convention back in the day. Now, lots of times these stories, the names go wrong, but this is the version that I've heard, and I searched it and I found it too. Muhammad Rida al-Mudaffar. A convention of the different madahib and schools of thought, and apparently back then they would get along more than they do now, because there was less jahl involved. And there was alims on this side, alims on that side, not zealots on one side and zealots on the other side. So anyway, there's a convention. Now he is going to represent the Shia madhab, the Ja'fari madhab. And on the other hand, if I remember correctly, as I said, my memory doesn't like me these days, there was Al-Alusi who comes. Now they get together, and after they start, the whole thing starts, he asks Muhammad Rida al-Mudaffar a question. He says, what do you say about the last prayer that the Prophet appointed the first Khalifa to lead? What do you say about that? Here, all he said was one line, and this is where I got it from. He said, إِنَّ الرَّجُلَ لَيَهْجُرُ. The Prophet is not speaking, he's speaking nonsense, na'udhu billah. What did he mean by this answer though? He said, if you can justify some of the Sahaba, we're not saying the second Khalifa said it, for argument's sake, if you can say that some, can digest that some people, they said to the Prophet when he said, bring me a dawat and katif, pen and paper, so to speak, so that I write something. They said, innahu layahjur, or ahajar, ayahjur. Is he speaking nonsense? He's speaking nonsense. He doesn't know what's going on. If you can say that there, then he was feeling very bad when he sent the first Khalifa to lead the prayer. So it loses all credibility here as well. Inna rajul layahjur. He said that one line. Of course, he doesn't believe in it, Muhammad Rida al-Mudaffar. He doesn't believe in it. But this is called jadal, and you know, jadal, which means to use something that that person believes in against himself. He said this to her. If the Prophet is feeling good and he's dragging his feet on the ground, then when he's not feeling good, of course. It's because of all these discrepancies, brothers and sisters, that the Shia version goes like this. That the Prophet, in his final moments, in his final days, that lad, those final hours, he's not feeling very good. He's not feeling good at all. He goes unconscious, comes back. Goes unconscious, comes back. Now it's time to pray. In one of these times that the Prophet goes unconscious, one of his wives tells the people, or tells the first Khalifa, to go and pray. Not that the Prophet tells and appoints or tells them to go and find him, find Abu Bakr to lead the prayer. No, Aisha is the one who says, "My father." And we have other cases where this has happened. The Prophet comes back, he regains his conscience, he finds out that, oh my God, the first Khalifa has gone to lead prayer. Ali, Fadl, come and drag me to the masjid. What, Prophet, where are you going? It's, you know, he's leading the prayer. You women are like the women of Prophet Yusuf. Take me to the, do you see where this line actually comes in? Take me to the masjid, no matter how hard it is. Take me to the masjid so that even if I'm sitting, I sit. Now, of course, when he's leading the prayer and this happens, he's not going to get up and leave. He'll move back so the Prophet can go up a little bit. But now, still, he gets credit for leading the people and him following the Prophet. Whatever. But this is what the Shia version goes like. Because of all of these discrepancies, it's once you, if you can just put aside Adalat al-Sahaba, everything all of a sudden just clicks. Makes sense. Before that, you're thinking this, that, what? Alright. Let's move on now. Let's just say that all of what we said is wrong. Not only did he lead the prayer, he led prayer for 10 days before too. Let's just say that. What does leading prayer have to do with Khilafatul Muslimin? That's the problem. What does this have to do with that? I don't get it. Let's at least say that this means Khilafa of Muslimin, but please at least say Man Kuntum Mawla Fahada Aliun Mawla also means that. How could you negate this and then approve that and establish that? I'm serious. This is the part that it comes, that you really say, please think a little bit more. Show me hadith. I don't have hadith. Allah gave us the Rasul of the Aql to use it and our common sense a little bit and try to think of Man Kuntum Mawla. I wonder what would have happened if the Prophet has raised another person's hand and said Man Kuntum Mawla Fahada Fulanun Mawla. You don't want to say the name because you never know, it just might get recorded somewhere. If that's the case, then this should also mean that we can't put a link between these two and then say there's no link between those two. The link between these two is clearer, at least, at the least, it's clearer than the other one. Especially when you go and look at the conditions of the Imam of the Jama'ah in Bukhari. How a child can lead it, how the prophets put like a blind person to lead the salat. One person didn't have enough clothing, he was leading salat. And so on and so forth. All of these stories that Marhum al-Alam al-Askari relates in his book. All of these conditions that don't need to be met in the Shia school, that the Shia have, are not supposed to be met, apparently, in the Sunni school of thought. So if anyone can lead Salat al-Jama'ah, then what's the link between him leading the prayer of the Prophet? Fine, he led the prayer. And that's why some of the more moderate brothers of the Sunni school, they say these are not dalil. Thank you. These are not dalil, but they still say these are dalil khafi. They're not dalil jali. They're not clear signs, but they are subtle signs. For those who pay attention, they will tell you. Now someone might say, fine, we'll give that to you. Leading the prayer doesn't mean, that's why anyone can lead prayer. Look at the conditions for the imam of Jama'ah. But leading the last prayer, leading the last prayer is what counts. That's the active ingredient here. The fact that it was the last prayer, that's what we're using. What we have to say here is that if the Prophet really had something in mind, as I said, he wouldn't have come in the middle of it and messed things up. Na'udhu billah. I don't like to say it like that. It got messed up for them. Leave any doubt that this is a sign or not for the Khilafah to come. That's one. If it really meant, number two, if it really meant this, then there's a link between the two. The first person who would understand this link is who? Is Aisha. Let's go back to the story I related in the beginning. In the beginning, what did we say? That Aisha, when the Prophet appoints Abu Bakr to go lead the Salat, the Prophet does that, Aisha objects. She says, my father is not fit for this. He's sensitive. He'll weep. The people won't be able to follow him. He won't be able to fulfill the duty of the Imam of the Jama'ah. If this was a clear sign, no one would dare go against the Prophet. He is appointing the leader to come. This shows that it's not clear. And if she's not going to understand the link, how are we going to understand the link? This is her own father. If there was any bit of a link there, the first ones who would acknowledge it were them. But they didn't. They actually tried to get in the way of it. As a matter of fact, they thought it's something bad, it's evil, it's bad omen. Alright, let's just say, throw all of that away. The Prophet insisting on him to be the first, the one to lead the Salat in this final prayer. I ask you, brothers and sisters, I ask you, who is more fit for leading an ummah? Who is more fit for leading an ummah? A person who can and is qualified to lead prayers, or a person who is qualified to lead and command and have under his command an army of Muslims? The last army to go and fight the enemies of Allah. Who am I talking about? Usama bin Zayd. Usama bin Zayd. The Prophet didn't just say go. The Prophet came himself. عَقَدَ اللِّوَى. He tied the flag and the standard for him. When the people were objecting, he said, I'm hearing that some are objecting. You objected to his father and you're objecting to him now. Go, go, anfidu. Insistent. To the extent that on Yawm al-Khamis, he made sure that they left and they come and bid the Prophet farewell and they left and they never saw the Prophet again. The Prophet had passed away when they came back. Oh people, I am doing this so that you know that a person who can lead an army can lead the ummah too. Someone might say that. We should have another sect, the Usama'is. Why? Because the Prophet appointed him and insisted on him. But no, we don't have this anywhere. All we have is, they will tell you, An-Nabi Amara Aba Bakrin ala Salat. Or bisalat, one. And two, the people saw that the Prophet has chosen someone for their deen, which is prayer, leading the prayer, which is a deeni, religious affair. They saw that he has appointed him for their deen and akhirah. So they were satisfied with him for their dunya and taking care of their dunya affairs. This is what you see. This is the argument that is presented. This is the final prayer of the Prophet. If it's ever said, these are some of the discrepancies. Now, I'm just going back to Bukhari and Muslim, as I said, mostly. But when you look at the rest of the books, it gets even worse and worse. But we're not even talking about those these days. Okay, let's move on. There's one more thing here. Now, it's not chronological, what we're doing. Let's move to Fatima Zahra, alayhi salam. With Fatima Zahra, the thing about her is that, alhamdulillah, we have unanimous literature that is unanimously accepted by the schools. So there's no arguing there over the literature. The only argument is the application of this literature. When you look at Fatima Zahra, alayhi salam, different parts of her life, one of those things that the Shia uses, that tonight I want to kind of, not speak against, but show some of the things that is said against us regarding this part of Fatima Zahra's life, so that we can strengthen ourselves and arm ourselves more. Some people, they just keep it to, for example, the book of Al-Muraja'at. Recite the salawat, please. The book of Al-Muraja'at, we have all heard of it, right? Between the Alim of Najaf and the Alim of Al-Azhar, back and forth letters asking about the Khilafah and all that kind of stuff. And it's interesting how much respect these two Alims have Brothers and sisters, the more disrespect, the more that's a sign of adam al-ilm, of jahl. When two alims get together, of course, one of them is going to be right, one of them is going to be wrong. But at this, they respect knowledge. What we're seeing today is all a result of ignorance. Anyway, we can't keep it at al-muraja'at. They have answered lots of the things that we have. We have to find the other answers that are out there. And there's plenty of answers if we look. I'm just giving, these are just a taste of what the Shia school has to say. Regarding Fatima Zahra and her being angry with the first two Khalifas. This is one of the things that the Shia school uses. Now, the thing I want to say tonight doesn't mean that we don't believe in this anymore, or I don't believe in this. No, very firmly I believe in this. Why? Because we have literature. I wish I had time to, after all these nights of going through the other sources, we would speak a little bit about the Shia sources and show how much detail we have there. You know, my heart is growing a little dark over these past 4 or 5 nights. I'm sorry. You must feel the same. Because it seems as if there's nothing out there to help us. Yes, in their books, of course. But in our own books, we have so much. Clear as day. But let's go back again. Let's go back to what we were talking about. It's unanimously accepted that the ghadab of Fatima equals the ghadab of Allah. The anger of Fatima, anger of Allah. That's why the Shia will go and find in Sahih al-Bukhari, will find a hadith. What does the hadith say? The hadith goes like this. Ghadibat, who's saying it? Aisha. Ghadibat Fatima bint Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Fahajarat Aba Bakr. She didn't talk to him anymore. She got angry with him and didn't talk to him anymore. فَلَمْ تَزَلْ مُهَاجَرَتُهُ حَتَّى تُوفِيَتْ. And this, not speaking to him, continued until she passed away. عليها السلام. وَعَاشَتْ بَعْدَ رَسُولِ اللَّهِ صَلَى اللَّهِ وَسَلَّمَ سَتَّةَ أَشْهُرٍ. We don't need that part. Okay. It says she got angry, and she never spoke with him anymore. And what does that mean? That means she passed away while she was angry, right? And you take this, you add it to her anger equals Allah's anger. What do you get? The result that Allah was not happy with him. Okay. Now, I want to give you guys an example of, and I've kind of, you could say, done a thorough look and research into this. I could not find, lots of searching actually I've done. I did. If anyone finds anything else, let me know. But I think I exhausted my the resources that are available, and I even searched online, tried to find anything I could. I found other things that I'll share with you, but I didn't find anything that will go against what I'm saying now. This is the result that we get out of it. Bukhari, we have this hadith from Bukhari. How? This is the second time we're going to hurt ourselves, maybe. You see that all of a sudden some of these Wahhabi sheikhs, they come and they say the hadith of Bukhari. We're playing by your rules. If it's in Bukhari, you take it, right? Yes, we do. This one hadith that you have from Bukhari, those parts, they will tell you, those parts, the ghadibat wa hajarat and wajadat alayh, these parts, these parts were added by the narrator himself. Aisha didn't say that. Subhanallah. And you cutting up the hadith like that? What can we say though? They'll prove it. There's pages upon pages that I maybe tried to read several times, but I fell asleep in the middle. That prove that this was not said. Fine, we don't need it. Fine. Oh, according to the Shia school, we know what the truth is. You don't want to accept? Fine. Don't accept. We'll talk about other things. So they will tell you, not only that, looks like you didn't hurt yourself yet. We want to make sure you hurt yourself. Not only that this hadith is not reliable because that part of it was added by the narrator, but we have found a hadith in our sources, they will tell you, and in your sources, they will tell you, that she passed away while she was happy. She was satisfied. Oof. Where's this hadith? It's in a sunan of Al-Bayhaqi, a sunan al-Kubra. Wait a minute, we were talking Bukhari and Muslim. We went down the list like 10 books to Bayhaqi. Yes, we did. Okay, so how many do we have of these hadiths? Just this one that has been narrated by Bayhaqi. All right, what is it? Tell us. لَمَّا مَرْضَتْ فَاطِمَةً أَتَاهَا أَبُو بَكْرِ الصِّدِّيقِ فَاسْتَأَذَنَ عَلَيْهَا. Abu Bakr came when she was sick and he got permission to enter. فَقَالَ عَلِيٌّ يَا فَاطِمَةً هَذَا أَبُو بَكْرٍ يَسْتَأَذِنُ عَلَيْكِ. Abu Bakr has come and he's getting permission to come meet you, see you, visit you. Imam Ali is telling Fatima Zahra alayhi salam. فَقَالَتْ أَتُحِبُّ أَنْ آذَنَ لَهُ قَالَ نَعَمْ. She gave permission. فَأَذِنَتْ لَهُ فَدَخَلَ عَلَيْهَا يَتَرَضَّاهَا. He comes in trying to please her, satisfy her, get her content somehow. Yeah? We're taking a step further, brothers and sisters, see? Not only is she not angry, but she's happy. يَتَرَضَّاهَا فقال والله ما تركت الدار والمال والأهل والعشيرة إلا ابتغاء مرضات الله. Abu Bakr tells Fatima Zahra that look, I left everything, my wealth, my family, everything. I left everything for مرضات الله, because of this burden that was put on my shoulders, this responsibility of khilafah. In other words, if I took fadak from you, I had no choice. This is what the Prophet wanted. Okay. I did this في مرضات الله ومرضات رسوله, for the satisfaction of the Prophet, and مرضاتكم أهل البيت, for your satisfaction أهل البيت. Don't you want me to uphold the Quran? Yes, we do. So I'm doing it for your thing, for your satisfaction. All right. ثم ترضاها. He continued to try to gain her content and satisfaction. حتى رضيت. She didn't die angry. She died happy. قال البيهقي though. مبس. Nothing else. No one else. So we're going to cut up Bukhari, the hadith that is there. And we're going to take Bayhaqi. Fine, let's do that. Let's do that. Not only will they tell you that, they will say, we found a hadith in your sources too. Of course, our sources are full of taqiyya when it comes to these issues, but let's look at what they show us. Inna Aba Bakrin qala laha. Who is saying this? Ibn Maytham al-Bahrani, in his famous commentary of Nahj al-Balagha, he's saying this. So first of all, it's not a hadith in those major hadith books of ours. It's a commentary of Nahj al-Balagha, and Ibn Maytham is saying, okay. Inna Aba Bakrin qala laha, inna lakima li'abik, kana Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi ya'khudu min fatak qutakum, wa yuqassimu al-baqi, wa yahmil minhu fi sabilillah, wa laki ala Allah an asna'a biha kama kan yasna' Rasulullah. He says the Prophet would take a share of that wealth that he had, he would give you. I'm going to take a share from, you know, those orchards and gardens or whatever wealth there is, and I'll give you. In other words, I'm not going to give you fadak, but I'll give you these at least. فَرَضِيَتْ بِذَلِكَ وَأَخَذَتِ الْعَهْدَ عَلَيْهِ بِهِ. So she was satisfied with that. Brothers and sisters, بَيْنَكُمْ وَبَيْنَ اللَّهِ بِاللَّهِ عَلَيْكُمْ. Tell me, she became happy with that. What is that pointing to? The fact that she's getting at least something. She's getting a share, a stipend. رَضِيَتْ بِذَلِكَ. And man, I even saw this in a debate between Sunni and Shia scholars or something online. I saw it. The guy was happy as anything. He's saying, SubhanAllah, SubhanAllah, look what we found. I'm like, what did you find? And that's when I hurt myself. That's not what the hadith is saying. All right, whatever. Whatever, let's just say she died happy. Question. This is the part I want you to pay attention to. And then we'll end. If she didn't pass away and she was angry, that means we can't use that statement that says whoever angers her angers Allah. We can't use this anymore. We'll put this to the side. Question. What about من مات وليس في عنقه بيع فقد مات ميتة جاهلية. What about this? Whoever dies and does not have the bay'ah of an imam on them has died a death of jahiliyyah. Okay. Where are you getting at, Shaykh? if she died happy, let's just say her being happy means that she gave bay'ah too. Which is not the case. Being happy doesn't necessarily mean bay'ah. How come Abu Talib alayhi salam, when he passed away, just because nowhere it has been recorded that he said ashhadu an la ilaha illallah, he said the shahadatain, how come since it's not recorded anywhere you say, oh, he's in hellfire, he wasn't Muslim, and then you make up hadiths about the Prophet saying that, oh yeah, he's in the hellfire, but because, na'udhu billah, because he helped the cause, his feet are only burning, na'udhu billah. How come there, since it's not recorded explicitly, we can draw such a conclusion? Here, Fatima Zahra, show me where it's been recorded explicitly that she gave bay'ah. Nowhere can you find it. So happiness does not equal bay'ah, but let's just say it means bay'ah. Let's just say she died with bay'ah. According to you guys, you brothers and sisters, how long did she live after the Prophet died? 6 months. Okay, that means 6 months she was upset, apparently. You yourselves are saying, فَرَضِيَتْ. She became happy in the end. For 6 months, did she have bay'ah or not? No. That means for 6 months she was sinning, na'udhu billah. No, but the hadith says, مَنْ مَاتَ. Whoever dies without bay'ah. Okay, fine. That means a Muslim can never give bay'ah to the first khalifa, even if he lives 20 years. And then before he dies, he gives bay'ah then. That's not what the hadith is saying. That's funny. That doesn't make sense. It says, listen, you better have bay'ah from the start, because if death comes all of a sudden and you did not have bay'ah, you're in trouble, man. So for 6 months, according to them, of course, we don't believe in the 6 month narration, and we think there's a reason behind Dhahabi and others saying that it took 6 months for Fatima Zahra to pass away. Anyway, according to them, 6 months. For 6 months, she was prone to a death of jahiliyyah, na'udhu billah. And this is something unanimous. This hadith is unanimous. So you see, brothers and sisters, no matter how much you try, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't click. Now someone will say, well, that doesn't prove that you're right. We said, we don't want to even prove that. We just want to show, if we are shaky in our foundations, others are also shaky in their foundations. Tomorrow night, inshallah, is our last night. What we're going to be covering, I'm going to change. I wanted to speak about Saqifa and some of the discrepancies there, but I thought that many of you have probably heard of it, although there's some interesting new material I'm sure no one has heard of, or very few might have heard of. But I'm going to put that aside, and we're going to talk about two or three of the challenges against Fatimiyyah. Namely, why did Imam Ali name his children after the Khulafa if there's such a problem between them? Why did Imam Ali give Umm Kulthum's hand in marriage to Umar ibn al-Khattab if there was a problem? And why did Imam Ali just stand there and watch when they attacked the home? If you Shia say that this is what happened, there's some interesting points. I'm going to try to keep it in a way that it's not repetitive. Some other points that usually are less heard, and some explanations, if Allah gives that tawfiq, inshallah. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Sallu ala Muhammad wa Muhammad 3 times, please.